This is the place where sports opinions collide. Dead in sports, I'm your host, Kenneth Benz. Joining me on the show, we have Shelton, Spike, and Nick.
What's happening?
FIFO is backstage.
FIFO should be here texting.
You know, he'll be on in a second. But we are here to catch up on everything that has happened since we have departed. In the NBA with the Knicks, Pacers, Wolves, Thunder. So, and then we're going to get into a couple of NFL updates. So, without further ado, let's get into our best of the week.
Yo, my best of the week, man. I had to go with your boy, Nick.
Cat, you didn't have to. Now you cursed
us.
I had to, man.
Cat had the game of his life. What did he score? I'm sorry, 20 in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
And he had like 8 rebounds. Cat had the game of his life. And I was really impressed that he stepped up at a time when you needed him the most. He showed up because that was a game that they were out of. Brunson didn't have it going. He couldn't get going for nothing. Cat stepped up and put the team on his back and carried them to victory. So shout out to Cat, man. That was the best performance of the week. Otherwise, we'd be having a different conversation tonight.
We'll be having a similar conversation tonight, actually.
Well, anyway, okay, that was an all time performance by him. It's what the playoffs are all about, and you know, these are the moments that help make your name. And you know, and Cat, that was pretty awesome by him. But let's continue, man. I think rolling into that, let's talk about this series. The Indiana Pacers shocked the world by taking an early 2-0 lead against the New York Knicks on the road. However, the Knicks bounced back from being down 20 points in game 3 to avoid an 0-3 hole in the series and are now playing in a pivotal game 4. Do we need this first question? I'm going to skip. Then I want to jump to Tyrese Haliburton I don't know. Nick, you might have some thoughts on it. So I'll open with do we need to have an updated conversation about Tom Thibodeau?
I'll start off and says yes, only because, but not in the way that y'all think I'm going to do it, because I know y'all think this is going to be my Nick Swan song episode, because I know a lot of y'all hating ass niggas is talking in the chat, talking about where's Brun Brun. Shelton, you, every time you ask that, what happened? You end up
that's what he was. No, Nick, I asked genuinely because I didn't see him in the game. I thought he was hurt. That's what
don't
I was
do
asking.
That. Don't do that. I promise. Nah, so I bring up Tom Thibodeau because, again, me and FIFO had a conversation right when the Cat trade happened in the offseason, that based off the talent that they had on the Knicks roster, Eastern Conference Finals was their barometer. They had to get there. They did, to everyone's surprise. You know, granted, you know, there were some injuries along the way, but injuries are a part of the game. But they've gotten here, and now I'm at a weird place, Lou, where it's like, you know how, like, let's say Dak gets you to the NFC Championship game, right?
It won't happen, Nick. I'm just saying. Stop there.
Hey, mute his mic, Cam. Mute his mic.
let's say Dak gets you to the, but then they get blown out in the NFC Championship game, right? How are you feeling about Dak as a quarterback? Because he's taking you to the point where you've have probably wanted him to get y'all to there, and y'all haven't probably been. Y'all haven't been to a title game in decades. I feel like
25 years.
So just like how the Knicks haven't been to the conference finals in about 25 years. So your expectations would be like he's exceeded them. However, now your expectations have changed based off that run at the same time. So I'm at a weird place where it's like I have to give credit to Tibbs, but based on how this game will end, which I think whoever wins this game is going to win the series. It's a weird place because he could go from shine to shit real quick for a lot of New Yorkers.
What could he have done differently, in your opinion, though, Nick? Like to not be looked at that way. What could he have done differently in this
season? You had to win game one, and I know it's hard to kind of say that loss was on him because the players took their foot off the gas. But as a head coach, again, as I mentioned before this series started, and I think Q pointed out too, Rick Carlisle was the best coach coming into this series. And based on how he's using these motherfucking challenges, it's showing like he damn near undefeated with the challenges. And
today was the first one they lost.
Today was the first one.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just saying, but like that's what I'm saying. He damn near, this is challenges to me are like going on fourth down. And it's like, he's got like 90% record on it. So it's like, he's out coaching them and his depth is killing the Knicks to the point where Tibbs had to adjust and do something he hasn't done. Granted, he's adjusted, but you had to win game one. I'm glad they won game three, but he had to make adjustments for that. It's a weird series for him. It's like he's playing on his back foot. He's playing on his heel. He's backpedaling, and he's not really there hasn't been a point in this series so far where you feel like Tibbs really outcoached Carlisle. It's been like the other way around.
I think people really just don't know Indiana and how well they play as a unit, as an offensive unit, and just everything that they do, which is a credit to Rick Carlisle, which kind of is spotlighting Thibs in this pivotal moment where coming in, you would think that they would have the advantage because they have names that we know, and then they have another guy who's supposed to not be as good as the other. Even though statistically this season he had the data to back it up, which is interesting how the media pick and choose who they prop up. I think that this is how this is just Thibs' MO. And we always know that he plays 6 or 7 guys heavy and he doesn't utilize his bench. I think we're starting to see possibly a trend where that may no longer be the case, where you start playing 9 players instead of 7. You add to that. So he has adjusted. He's playing guys, but they and you can tell me better than I would know, Nick, is whether or not they play enough to where you can count on them in moments in a playoff game. You know, do they have the rhythm? Do they know when to cut and all this other stuff? They don't have any chemistry with the players, and these are high stakes moments. And every single second in the NBA playoffs are high stakes moment. Every turnover is crucial. So, and when he's putting those guys out there, to me that is a win for the Pacers, because his guys are used to playing like that, you know. So, and it's possible one of those guys show up and become a hero, a folk hero that we have in the playoffs. But it's also possible that they, you know, be a negative. So I think Thibs is just one of those old school guys. I don't know if we need to have that conversation about him just yet, because the series is far from over. So we'll see how it goes. But he's made the adjustments. Let's just see what Rick Carlisle do to counter that, and if Thibs has another counteroffensive to that.
Has he made an adjustment, though? Or was his hand forced? Because let's be honest, Ken, when Brunson has been on the bench is when they made the two biggest runs in this playoff run. They've made the two biggest runs with Brunson on the bench. I don't know if that is a Thibodeau adjustment or Thibodeau just having to go to guys because guys have dead legs right now. You know what I'm saying? And that's a byproduct of his coaching throughout the regular season. You know what I'm saying? And you also look at the product that's on the floor when Brunson is out there. It's very point guard centric. As a former point guard that had to do a lot of carrying on his high school squads, that is tiring. And that's partly why you see Jalen Brunson getting foul trouble. Because what did I say about Anthony Edwards in that second half of, I want to say it was game two or maybe game one, when he came out scorching in the second half, they slowed him down. You got to run offense for him. So that way it's easier for his legs, not having to dribble up the ball. He get double teamed. Now you got to figure all of this stuff out. Get off the ball. Go run some offense, get him in spots where he can now be devastating, right? Instead of always having to play pick and roll, pick and roll, pick and roll, pick and roll, pick and roll. That is tiring. And it's not like – and he doesn't have a physical superpower. He's not taller, stronger, faster than the guards he's playing against, right? He
He is an average guy. That's the reason why he's an underdog, because he ain't supposed to be doing what he's doing. A lot like Isaiah Thomas for Boston, not the original Zeke. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about the 5'9 guy. Like, what superpower does he have? Jalen Brunson is extremely clutch. Jalen Brunson can shoot. He's crafty, but he's not going to blow by you. He's not going to dunk on you. He don't have those extra gears. So that means that he has to work just harder naturally. So you got to make the game easier for him. I don't think Thibodeau is doing that. And the conversation around Thibodeau, in my opinion, still hasn't necessarily changed. He got to win a championship. He's done everything else that there is to do as a coach outside of doing that. So for
to keep his job in New York, he got to win a championship?
I didn't necessarily say that. I said for Thibodeau's career, I feel like he has to win a championship because he's been a great head coach. For him to keep his job, I think he's done enough now to keep his job.
I was going to ask, career aside, like if the Knicks are evaluating this season, he's done enough to be back next year, right?
100%.
Right.
But at the same time, it's those conversations need to be had. Like we need to run the roster a little bit deeper. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like because if you need your guys to be there in the end, they can't run as many minutes the way that he plays them. Like we can't have games where you only play seven guys, dog. Like that's just. That's not. This is NBA basketball. It's not going to work.
I think you can have games where you do run seven. You just can't do it every game in a
regular season. Regular season?
No, you're talking about. We talking about playoffs now.
But that's what I'm saying. Thibodeau's issue is that he don't have his guys late because he runs them ragged in the regular season and they don't have the legs. So well, no, in the playoffs, I'm okay with that at times. You know, a game or two that. Your guys got it going, whatever, right? Like, I'm okay with that. But not in the regular season.
Yeah, no, in the regular season, you let guys play and you kind of figure out your rotations a little bit more because, you know, you kind of pace yourself through the season to get to the end. I think that he's trying to make adjustments. You're right. I think his hands were forced to make these adjustments. And when he sat, when we saw Brunson sit, when he got in foul trouble, he was like, oh, okay, these guys – you know, they didn't lose it for me. So it kind of built up his trust, whereas it could have been built up all season had he been letting them play more. My thing to him and my advice, which, of course, he don't need my advice, but I would think he should play McBride a little bit more with Brunson, like you said, to take some of the pressure off the ball handling and the fact that McBride he a dog too. He's not afraid to shoot the basketball. And then I know you got two small guards, but at this day and age, it's positionless basketball anyway. You can help out from the back because you got two bigger guys behind you. You can play those two guys together, and you probably should to take some of the ball handling pressure off of Brunson. That's kind of like sitting him without sitting him is what I would consider.
But for,
is this a question? Is it?
Go ahead, Lou.
I was just wondering, is this a question about him coaching the Knicks or is this a question about Thibodeau's legacy?
Because this is him coaching the Knicks for me.
Okay. If it's him coaching the Knicks, he's done his job. And he's done enough to be back next year. A lot of the things that I feel like FIFO and Shelton were saying, and even you niggas, like we're talking about his legacy and wondering, can he change? Like that's never going. That's his MO. He's been doing it since Chicago. He's not going to change from doing it. If he can win a championship from doing it, then yeah, people will have him in higher regard. But Tim Thibodeau is who he is. Like the Knicks just have to decide. He's gotten us to the Eastern Conference Finals. Oh, yes, we cool with keeping him here and let him do the thing that he does, run players down, play seven players. Like, he's never going to change that. I don't think that there's any adjustment that's going to be made to Tom Thibodeau as a coach to make him be revered more in history. Like, no, like, he is what he is. Like, he's a run-of-the-mill NBA coach, above average to good, and that's what he's going to be. He'll never be like a Phil Jackson or Pat Riley. He's not going to be one of those legendary coaches. That'll never be the case, I don't think.
If the Knicks go on – I mean, not Knicks. If the Pacers go on to win this series, how will we look back on Tyrese Halliburton? Like, and do you guys think he's a top five point guard in the league right now?
Go ahead, Nick.
Well, I was going to say, first and foremost, Jalen, you need to correct this thing. Indiana ain't leading 3-1 right now. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. That's not the accurate series score.
Let me find out the series fixed.
For the record. Yeah, you got the damn
I thought that
script.
Was funny.
He put in there last night.
Go ahead, Sean.
I would Wait. What was the question again, Ken? Was he top what?
Halliburton.
Top five point guard. I would have to say so. And the reason I would say so is one, he's in the Eastern Conference Finals. Two, you think about how they got to the Eastern Conference Finals and the amount of shots that he hits for this team. He is important for this team. In every game, you see him contributing one way or another. Either it be he got 10 assists in the game. He almost had a triple-double in the first half of this game. Big moments take big players, and he steps up and makes plays when it matters most. And these aren't just regular run-of-the-mill plays. It's one thing to hit a shot with your eyes closed. This guy is running back to the three-point line to take a three-point shot to win the game as opposed to trying to tie a game. You can't say much about that. He has, you know, nerves of steel, and he's proven that he's ready, and now is the time. I don't see how he can't be in the finals, and I don't see how there's a possibility he could come out a champion at the end of this. So I think so. I think definitely
pump,
we got to put
pump the brakes. He ain't even won the series at all. So I don't know why you going to the championship. I got to hear it. You got to do one of these days a top five point guard list currently in the NBA. I don't know if you've done that yet.
No, not current.
But I would think he would be high in consideration because right now I'm thinking him, Cade, Brunson, SGA, and – I know I'm forgetting somebody.
Be disrespectful, obvious. Nick. You ain't forgetting nobody, Nick. Who you got?
That was four right there. I'm trying to think of who the last one.
How are you trying to think of it? It's Curry. You know who it is.
I was going to say Luka before I even thought about Curry. But either way, Halliburton is in that conversation. He's debatable, especially what he's doing this year. I think it's crazy how the fact that we don't talk about Indiana at all, and I say we, I mean everybody, not just out, mm-hmm. you know, even us.
Yep.
We don't talk about everybody, any Indiana like that, and they've been the back. They've been on the same trajectory as the Minnesota Timberwolves, like back-to-back conference finals, and of course we're gonna get to a conversation about how much we talk about their best player, but as far as Minnesota, I'll say this, I hate his guts. I can't stand Halliburton. He ain't shit to me, but I respect him. I respect him because even though he got that goofy-ass shot, it go in. And it's not like they're not defending it. Well, sometimes they be, the Knicks be letting these motherfuckers shoot wide-open threes. But, like, he's just – he is that good, but in a old conventional way, almost like he's Rondo with an offense, in my opinion. Like, he maybe not with a rebound and all like that, but he can somehow control a game without having to score too much because people have always talked about – like he can score like 10 points in a game and have 15 assists, and he feels like he was all over the court. So I'll give him that respect, but no, I hate his guts. I want him to lose everything. I don't want nothing good to happen to him. I hope his daddy get kicked out again. That's what I hope.
Last Tuesday we was talking about, or I was saying how you can't stop a pure point guard. Right, and this is exactly what I was talking about. Also, you look at Jalen Brunson, the game that they won, he had 20-some-odd points, only had one assist. That's also something that I talked about. He's a volume scorer, and that assists for the way that the New York Knicks play don't matter. What matters for Jalen Brunson and the New York Knicks, can Jalen Brunson get 20-plus shots up? Can he score 20-plus points? And is he clutch down the stretch? And for the Indiana Pacers, is Tyrese Halliburton – you know, playing playmaker point guard type basketball, because he's arguably the best playmaking point guard in the NBA. Arguably the best playmaking point guard. And I will get to current players before basketball season is over, Nick. But all that being said, Tyrese Halliburton is definitely, like, we have to have that conversation. And Ken, to the point, I think you were, or I think Nick, you was also saying this as well, like, we don't talk about Indiana. This mm-hmm. is the issue that NBA has with small market teams. Because no matter their success, sometimes we don't talk about them, even with Giannis in them, right? Like, when we talking about Giannis.
With Indiana.
Even with OKC. Like,
what's the talk about?
I think there are always things to talk about.
There are.
Yeah.
What? Like,
but it, what's the time? It doesn't happen. Yeah.
It just depends on. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Ken.
No, you got
it. I get what you're saying, Lou, and I know what you're saying because Indiana kind of flew under the radar all year long because you had
for two years.
Yeah, what Cleveland was doing. So Cleveland took a lot of the attention. What Boston already is. So we talked about Cleveland and Boston so much that everything else just kind of fell by the wayside. Nick, we couldn't talk about the Knicks because they was 0 for whatever against all the top teams this year. So nobody was talking about any of these teams while Indiana just motored along under the radar. So now when it matters most,
that was, they weren't playing that great either, though. They kicked it was like a lot of teams in the second half of the season kicked it into gear. Like it wasn't like Indiana had
the third or fourth best record.
And that's a conversation though, Nick, right? It's Indiana went to the Eastern Conference Finals this year. They're struggling. What's going on with Indiana? Boom. You know, when the season is happening and things are going on, there's a storyline, I believe, in with every franchise. You know, it's just whether or not people care enough, or if you have people that's following closely enough to pick something out to the point where it could be a group conversation like this. You know, but I see what you're saying, Spike, but I think that is the detriment of mainstream media, because they only hyper-focus on big market teams because there's a higher number of viewers in that area that would tune in to hear them talk about their teams. But I think there is riches and niches, as they say, in those concentrated areas, because shit, you guys are the only one that that's talking about us. You know what I'm saying? So they would flock
on the main platform and talk about it. That's a good point. To the question about Tyrese Halliburton, I want to agree with something FIFO said. The reason that he is top five is because he's one of the few, if not the only guard that does what he does. Like, I'm not worried about points. Every other top point guard that we talk about now, and it's a evolution of the game, so it's not no fault to them, but they thinking about scoring first, passing second. Halliburton is really the only person that can score that's thinking about getting his teammates involved. That's the reason that he's so good. That's the reason he's top five.
And it was probably because he got treated like he was he got treated like a lesser than player because he got traded by Sacramento. Sacramento chose De'Aaron Fox and others, and then traded Fox. Yeah, and it's like he got treated like
Steve Urkel, though. Like you can look at it. I could understand why NBA players would look at his game and be like, he's overrated. But the proof is in the pudding. We're seeing it. Like, I'm the one that been in the Eastern Conference Finals the last 2 years. You cannot like my game. You can think my shot is ugly. You can think, oh, he's supposed to be a score first point guard versus get my team involved point guard. But he's seen the success that a lot of point guards that we regard that we have in a high regard in the NBA today, they just haven't seen the success that he has because he plays the game differently. I think that's something that we can say accurately about him from seeing him over the last 2 years. But to the other point, too, Indiana is not – it's just not interesting. Like, no one cares about Pascal Siakam and, like, he plays like Steve Urkel, Halliburton. Like, no one wants to talk about that. If we come in here on a weekly basis, it's October or November when the season starts, football is in full effect. If Indiana is doing well, we don't care. Like, just like with Cleveland this year, they had one of the best records in the league. No one cared to talk about them because it's Cleveland and LeBron's not there. So to Ken's point, there is a problem in media with talking about teams like Indiana, teams like Cleveland, teams like Milwaukee, because outside of their specific fan bases, really no one cares. It's not a national talking point.
It's not a media thing, though. It's an organizational thing. It's an organizational thing. Indiana would rather be mediocre and be in playoff purgatory versus crashing out and being so bad that they are now drafting high, right? And we know that they are also a market that is not free agent friendly, right? You look at some of the bigger markets, right? Like, they are free agent friendly, but they also swing for the fences. We talked about Luka and the Lakers all year because it was a massive trade. Right. The bigger franchises, we talked about New York getting Cat. They won that trade. Right. We talked about Cat being a difference maker for New York at the beginning of the season. Big cities, for the most part, swing big. And then we talk about them. We talked about last year when Dame was traded to Milwaukee. And how and they were now a championship contender. Right. They got that coverage for a year. But
I don't think that we talked about them like we talk about, like, oh, what's wrong with the Lakers? What's wrong with the Cowboys? Like, they're teams that you can specifically speak about, and you know people are going to react to it. The read, like a team but, like Indiana, like just I'm sorry, real quick. Indiana probably has one of the best situations in the Eastern Conference, but people would rather talk about.
But it's not sexy.
What's Boston going to do?
But it's not sexy
because Tatum is hurt and Brown and these people are making this.
But it's not sexy though because
I'm agreeing with Indiana's roster. Sexy, so why would we talk about it though? Like,
but that's the difference though. But that's the difference. Boston drafted their big two, right? Nobody mm-hmm. on this Pacer roster was drafted by Indiana.
But it ain't even that, FIFO. What it basically boils down to is the marketing of sports. And when we talk about this, we talk about even back in the day, you know, before cable and all this the stuff that we have now, internet, you only had a few teams that were on TV. You only had a few teams that you could watch. That's why you have so many Cowboys fans all over the world, because Dallas was on every week. That was a national team. You have Yankees fans everywhere because the Yankees were on all the time. You know, here we saw the Braves. So a lot of us are Braves fans because that's all we saw. So you got teams that are national teams that got airplay all the time. We never saw the Pacers. If you didn't have cable, you didn't see no Indiana Pacers. You saw the Knicks, saw the Bulls. No,
you saw but I grew up in Chicago. Miller play
for him. That's what I'm saying. If you didn't, if you're regular people out, you didn't see the Pacers. You saw the Knicks, the Bulls, national teams were the Lakers, Sixers, Knicks, Bulls,
Celtics.
And that was pretty much it. And yeah, Celtics. So those are the teams that everybody migrated towards. So now, even wins or losses, these are still the most interesting, most polarizing franchises and storylines to watch because it still is a story.
I was going to say, I don't disagree, Shelton, but at the same time, you look at squads like Miami. We talk about Miami. Why? Because they swing for the fences. They went and got Jimmy Butler. They went and overachieved and went to two NBA Finals runs. Right, like there's still other franchises that aren't necessarily in the guaranteed media space, right? Because I don't disagree. Chicago, super big market, LA, New York, Boston, Philly. That's guaranteed media. It don't matter if they're good or bad or they didn't right. make no move. We're gonna talk about them. Move them to the side. Let's talk about the Miamis, the Houstons, let's talk about the San Antonios. Right, like those bigger mid-market teams that aren't always necessarily guaranteed, for the most part, they swing for the fences and or have drafted guys that we're gonna talk about. And that's the reason why Indiana don't get talked about. They traded for Tyrese Halliburton. The only person out of their core that was drafted by them is the big man, Miles Turner. The rest of them, they shot for him, and then they weren't sexy names. Pascal Siakam wasn't a sexy name. So they don't make sexy moves, which is why they don't get talked about.
No, I was going to say that last part you said is really what it is. And the reason being is a lot of the players that we talk about, the sexy names, don't want to go to the mid-market teams. They're not going 100%. There. Like I'm a Hornets fan. We'll forever be stuck in purgatory because unless we draft these players, we're not going to get an opportunity.
Exactly. So, yeah. And that's why I say it's organizational, Ken.
I don't know if Tyrese is top five yet. We'll see. You know, maybe we can update the list, but either way it go. What I will say, just to close out that before we move on, yay, is that villains, bad guys. Mm-hmm. You know, Halliburton doing the choke sign put him in the spotlight. It was a moment and something that people can remember. And
on the anniversary too.
Yeah, and I watched Indiana Pacers because they had a star in Reggie Miller. You know, they had Riley Miller, the Davis Bill boys, David. Rick yeah, Smith. I watched those guys, and they were still a team. So, you know, if you win and you're successful and you got guys that are marketable, you know, people will follow. But anyway, but yeah, we're going to leave it there, man, and we'll come back with our next conversation. The topic of today's show, we're going to talk about the Timberwolves. And we have to say, I see you guys been waiting for that. So we'll be right back.
If you are a fan of gaming, then you need to check out Dead End Gaming. Dead End Gaming brings you honest reviews, hilarious moments, and deep dives into the conversations take place in the industry. No sugarcoating, just real gamers gaming. Check out Dead End Gaming, the world's most dangerous gaming crew, on Twitch or YouTube. Just look for Dead End Gaming ATL. That's Dead End Gaming ATL.
Ooh, I'm going to watch. Oh, that's,
yeah, Ken's on watch.
All right. On watch. Welcome back. Welcome back to the show. It's time for On Watch. The player I have on watch this week, Anthony Edwards. And this isn't about how good he is. This isn't a question of whether or not he can play or any of those things like that. But this is his second appearance in the Western Conference Finals. And he is not showing up. And he has had the experience. I know OKC is the better team. I picked OKC to win this series because they have been the best team in the NBA all season long. But that was a winnable game last night, and he put up 16 points. In game one, he only scored 5 points in the second half. When he'd been great in the second half, the whole playoff round, we were just talking about it. And he just went MIA. Yeah, he scored 30, you know, in the only game that they won. But what did it mean? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. That game last night, that's when you make your moment. That's when you go out and show what you can do. Getting to the Western Conference Finals isn't anything to disrespect.
As you disrespect it.
At these moments, they come and go, and they at the end of the day won't mean shit. Because nobody will ever really remember. Like it just won't. So his job, he has to win a title. So on this program, there's been a conversation about, you know, guy's story. Now there's a story developing about Ant. He has the marketability. He talks a lot. But sometimes that mouth get him in trouble. So what is he going to do moving forward as a player and as a highly marketable and a fake player in the NBA? You know, that has all the skill sets and everything that he needs. Will he get back here? Because, yeah, you went to the Western Conference, but if you know, you played a Lakers team with a rookie coach. You played a Warriors team without Curry. So we could put an asterisk by this run, but your mouth got you in trouble last year because you were talking about because you talk shit about Kyrie, and then he put you out. So for me, man, and all this stuff is good, man. It sounds good, and you hear. But I got to watch, bro, because people are hyping you up, and now it's all about getting it done. And what is his story going to be?
Ken, let me ask you this. Conference
Finals appearance, or is he going to be a champion?
His mouth got him in trouble. It's crazy.
He said it twice.
Hey, Ken, let me ask you this. Do you think that if we had the type of media coverage that we did today, this is the type of scrutiny that Michael Jordan would have got? Not making it.
He was getting it. He was.
Yeah, they said this about Jordan.
Yeah.
Before they went against the Lakers, I remembered it. Them saying that he couldn't win.
And he win. But what I'm saying is the media wasn't like it is now. Right, like that, like we weren't necessarily calling for his head. We weren't saying, "Oh, he's on watch." Like Jordan was still great. Jordan got a lot of passes.
You're a little bit younger, but you got to remember, they were saying that about Jordan. They were saying he was a selfish player. They were saying that he can win in the playoffs. Like that was a conversation they had. Like they were talking about him like that.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that they weren't. But I feel like we're okay, and obviously this is where it becomes unfair to compare eras, right? Like because the media now, like us regular five dudes, we're considered media now, right? Like wasn't like that back then. But at the end of the day, I don't know if Jordan got enough criticism. At least, definitely not like how these guys. Yeah.
He got even more than Ant right now. Like I remember
he never got more than LeBron.
Oh, that's different, though. We ain't talking
about that. Yeah. That's different. Like,
That wasn't what LeBron was on Sports Illustrated pages. That's a totally different conversation.
And LeBron has earned a lot of that criticism.
LeBron was on Sports Illustrated pages at 15. He was a sophomore. They were saying he was the best basketball player in the world.
Yeah.
So like, it was just different.
Yeah, it was.
We can get into a larger conversation. Let's talk about the series now. But I'm watching him now. That's it. Still one of my favorite players. I still got him as that top dog. But now I'm watching the career, bro. You know, and I still love everything about Ant.
Like I told y'all in our group chat. The YouTube comments, the subreddits, they was calling our names, talking about some of these niggas was gassing up Ant-Man and he over here shitting the bed. The thing about me, personally, I'm not going to speak for nobody else. I like being early to the party. You know what I'm saying? While the DJ's still setting up Shelton, while the ice is, you know, somebody still got to go get ice, I'm at the door waiting in line first and foremost. The fact that this man is only 23 and has been to back-to-back Western Conference Finals this early in his stage of career, the fact that we have these expectations for him this early in his career says a lot about him. The fact that he still is developing and still getting better as a player says a lot about him. Were we wrong, or was I wrong about his level of play for this series? We'll see. You know what I'm saying? The series ain't over yet. We'll see. You know what I'm saying? If Julius Randle scored 10 points, we may be talking about a tie series. But for me, it's just that I look at him as someone who is going to be the face of the league because people are already talking about that. And while he should be held accountable because 16 points ain't going to cut it in the playoffs, especially in this conference finals, I do like the fact that he has a mentality of like, I can be the greatest, or I can be great, and nobody in front of me can stop me from that happening. Now, right now, OKC is, but I don't mind saying that this cat is going to be something. He's probably going to be top three or the best player in the league over the next 4 or 5 years. We'll see. But as far as what he's doing in this series, it's been inconsistent. You know, the last time we spoke about this series, we were literally watching the middle of game one, and Ken and a few others were, and Afi was also saying that too. When he was on the show, don't overreact, underreact to game ones. And a lot of us were reacting in real time. Y'all saw us to that game one, and we saw the highs and lows of it. But I just think that right now, going into the season after that trade with the Knicks, no one thought that Minnesota was going to be here, and they're here again. No one thought that Julius Randle can make a deep playoff series run. And they're here. Even going back to last year, no one thought that Denver could lose in a 7-game series, Shelton, until we saw them do it, you know, and he was their best player on that team. So it's just like, I like where he's going. I feel like we can see the trajectory of him being a champion eventually, maybe multi-time champion. But I don't think that people should really be looking at him differently or shitting on him heavily because of this series, because it's like, again, Ken was trying to say that, oh, yeah, just because you got the two Western College finals, in hindsight, it ain't going to mean shit if you don't win a chip. We can say that about a lot of motherfuckers that's in the Hall of Fame and all that other shit. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, we wouldn't talk about them like that.
All right. Let me set it up. Hold on. The Oklahoma City Thunder won a close game against the Minnesota Timberwolves on Memorial Day evening, 128-126. They now have a 3-1 lead in the series with the potential to clinch the series at home in game five. What has been the most surprising thing about each team that you've noticed in the series? And do we need to have an updated conversation about Anthony Edwards?
I'm going to say this real quick. I think it is doing an injustice to Ant. I get why people are coming for him, but I think it's still injustice in a way, because it's not like niggas came for Jason Tatum this way, and he had a better team. And like that, he went back-to-back Eastern Conference Finals. Y'all started coming for Jason Tatum more recently. Then, nobody was really coming for him. And why? Why is because he was going up against LeBron and he was in the Eastern Conference. Like, it was a minute before he broke through. Like, I don't get why Ant is getting all this pressure. And like Nick said, nobody even expected him to be here. Do he has an excellent coach? We don't even talk about his coach, so you don't expect that. Do we think the pieces around him are extravagant? No. Like, he's facing a better team. And, like, y'all are making it seem like they weren't like the team itself. They just fell flat yesterday. It was still a close game until the fourth quarter. They were still scoring points. They scored over 120 points. Like,
right.
Why are we acting like
he?
No, you're making the argument, though, dog. You're making the argument for me. Yeah, he fell flat. Yeah, like, the team did not.
Flat. The coaching came through. They had a great game plan. Yeah. He fell flat. And then he dismissed that by saying, oh, I think I played a smart game. That's not when you're looking at somebody.
He made the smart plays. And if he didn't make the smart plays, then he wouldn't have been in that position.
But he didn't.
No,
he didn't
make the smart plays. No, that's passing the
ball. Like, so, like a scorer and the person that we're considering Anthony Edwards to be is going to be more aggressive in a game like this. Like, that's just a matter of fact. I don't care what he say about making the right plays. That's some young nigga shit. That's some, oh, I'm passing the buck to my teammates. We know that if he wanted to score, if he wasn't shooting well, if his shot wasn't going in, if they were like closing the lanes and closing the cutting lanes, like he said, he's going to drive to the basket if he's being aggressive, and he's going to force himself to get at least to the free throw line. Every superstar does it. We've been seeing this shit for 20 years in the NBA.
Yeah, but
it ain't no superstar. There's not one superstar that can't force themselves to the line because we know they're going to get calls. So him passing the buck like that and acting like, oh, I was just making the right play, that's unacceptable for what we expect out of him. That's why everybody giving him backlash.
That's not true either. That's not true either because back to the Jason Tatum point. When he forces it, we also say we also cut him out. Russell Westbrook also gets the same thing for running 100% the whole game. Like, he's playing through the flow of the game. I think if there's a mindset, and like y'all said, it may be some young nigga shit. And I had this argument with somebody earlier today about people are forcing what they accepted from what the media told them and what the world told them to be. And now they're mad at everybody else for pushing back and being like, bro, that's not what it has to be. Like, this idea of saying that other people did it, it doesn't make sense if it's not working for the team. Because if he was a selfish player, then niggas would be like, bro, you just chucking up shots. And if he was inefficient, niggas would be like, he's the reason why they lost. He can't win for losing in this situation. I'm not completely exonerating him. I'm just saying,
You don't put it all on him. But here's what you do, Doc. You put a majority of it on him because, according to most, including himself, he's the leader of this team. So when you are the leader of the team, you are expected to lead this team to the promised land. That's what I would think so. And you had three players to score over 20 points. So he had all the help he needed. We could talk about Randall not scoring all day long. You had people step up and have career days. Like I said, we had Alexander Walker with a career day. You had DiVincenzo scoring buckets. You had McDaniels hitting buckets. All he had to do was do his part. And then after the game, what you say when you're a leader, that's on me, man. I got to play better. That's what I would expect him to say. He tell you all the other times how great he is. That's why I come for him, because he talks about how good he is. I said it a couple weeks ago.
But
when I brought it up.
I'm not excusing him for the 16-point game and they lost by two. My thing is that he scored three times more than Julius Randle did, and that's his second best player on the team, right?
But nigga's not him against Julius Randle.
Let me finish my point. Him scoring 16 points is not enough in any playoff game, especially when he scored over 30 in game three. Like, him dropping down to 16 obviously wasn't enough. However, in this particular game four, because every game in the playoffs is different, this particular game four, the OKC Thunder was like, they were whatever lackadaisical defense they were playing last game where they lost by 30. They went in overdrive with how committed they were. Like, Ant ain't doing shit this game. So him saying, like, listen, I had to make the right play. I understood his mentality and his logic with that. Granted, that doesn't fit our narrative of what we think of Ant as far as being an aggressive.
Our narrative.
Can I finish my point?
But you're saying our narrative, like we saying something wrong.
Our narrative, because we said last week he's the best player in this series. He's the one that's gonna do all this other shit, and he did. So of course, when we notice that, we gonna call that out. But my thing is that they lost, like Doc was saying, they lost by 2 points, bro, and they had a hell of a contribution from the bench. The bench was phenomenal. That was the best that I've seen DiVincenzo since last year's playoff run with the Knicks, and Alexander Walker. But for me, it's like when Julius Randle only gives you 5 points in a game where you only lose by two. I'm talking about him because, again, like you mentioned, Shelton, everything can't be on Ant. You can't put 100% blame on Ant, especially when you're paying when they traded for Julius Randle. They gave up on Cat to get Julius Randle. And so far, we talked about Julius Randle this whole playoff series or this playoff run. As far as like we have never seen Julius Randle be this consistent in the playoffs, playing like how he does in the regular season. So for him to don't shit the bed in a must-win game, I can't just excuse that and say, oh, it's all because of Ant.
We're not gonna say all because of Ant. That ain't the point. But the point of it is you look at Ant. We always say it on this show. We don't give nobody no passes. We don't give anybody any passes. But, so why are we all of a sudden building this narrative that Ant's, oh, he's a kid now. He's still a kid. Whereas when he plays well, he's this. But when he doesn't play well, that's his excuse. I mean, he was in the Western Conference Finals last year. But it's the same guy, right? It's the Dragon Slayer. So
we didn't have any expectations in the Western Conference Finals last year either.
And we did this year, right?
Hold on. Was it the game before this a must-win game, and he showed up then? Like, technically, the game before this was a must-win game too, right? And did he not show up?
All of them technically are must-win games, but when you're down, okay. When you're down 2-1, that is the must-win game. You can't go down 3.
What? So hold on. It's more of a must-win when you're down 2-1 than there is to be 2-0 when no one's came back from 3-0.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you're down 2-1, you have an opportunity to go back and start the series over and make it a
You can't go down 3-1.
You had an opportunity to make this a 3-game series. You had an opportunity to make this a 3-game series, and he did not show up. That's all it boils down to. We could talk about Randle all day. But
you know what greatness comes down to is consistency. And the thing about AE, he hasn't gotten there at the highest levels just yet, right? He's obviously been consistent two years back-to-back Western Conference Finals. We saw him an uptick in his three-point shot and three-point makes this season. We know that he's been consistently great. But we know that it takes a whole nother level of consistency in the playoffs. When we know what you want to do, we know your strengths and weaknesses, we know everything about your squad. For you to say, F all that, I'm getting my 30-plus points a game, 25-plus points a game, and it don't matter what you do. He hasn't unlocked that level yet, and that's what we're calling out.
I think the question about this is, though, the question about this is, you're right, FIFA, but how do we know that the mindset that he has in this interview when he says, oh, I made the right play, how we know he's not going to do that for the next 10 years?
Because he
still get 16 point playoff games. Right. Like so, it doesn't sound like he's in the mindset of I gotta get, like, again, I was reading Jordan, but he was like, bro, I know how to get 8 points every quarter. That's 32 points a game. I know how to do
that's
it.
That's my fucking
that's
point.
Jordan.
Right there,
Ant is supposed to be is just as good. So my point is, no, is that not his mindset?
No,
oh,
that man told me out of his mouth just that he's better than SGA.
Right, y'all know he's not.
That's what he said. He said he was better. He said he was ready. So if he tells me he's ready, I ain't going by nothing but what he said. Now, if he came with humility, we're talking a different story. But he said he was ready. This is what he said. And he then said when he played bad, instead prime. Of saying he said he was better than those two. They asked him straight up. He said, I'm already better than them. That's what he said.
He admitted last year he was too tired. That's what I'm saying. Like, Shelton, like, you're going off
it
the
just sounds like excuses to me.
It's not excuses because no one's saying that.
So when he plays bad, he got an excuse.
No. There's no excuses. No one is saying that he is excused for his play. I keep saying, bruh, 16 points ain't enough in any playoff game, especially him coming into the series when I deemed him as the best player in the series. That's not enough. However, like I said, at this point, as I was mentioning, I was trying to explain that in the chat. At this point in the playoffs, we see that team basketball is going to win you championships, not individual ISO basketball. The main thing that I will say about his game that I do not like, especially this season compared to last season, he has stepped away from his mid-range game. When we've seen in these playoffs, the mid-range is king. From SGA to Tyrese to Brunson, the mid-range is how you win games in the deep in the playoffs, because they're going to take you away from the three and they're not going to give you easy layups, which we watched last night. He was chucking up threes, didn't make them, even if some were wide open, and he couldn't get to the paint consistently. So he so it nullified him because he became a 3-point shooter.
I'm not even going to go as far as the game is concerned. I'm going by what he said. And like I said, what I look at, and you're right, Nick, you're not absolving him from blame. But you know who absolved him? He did. He absolved himself by saying, I made the right play. I ain't play bad. I made the right play. That to me told me, nah, bro, you ain't taking
LeBron used to say that all the time.
That's that LeBron shit.
LeBron used to say that all the time.
You're not going to compare him to Jordan. Hey, if you're not going to compare him to Jordan, then don't compare him to LeBron.
I'm not comparing him to LeBron.
He said the same thing LeBron said when you tell me, that's not what Jordan.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying I'm bringing up LeBron because LeBron always talked about, I'm here to make the best play. He set the standard for generations to come, which Anthony Edwards is in, Jordan where it's
set,
like
you, Jordan set the standard for generations to come.
So we're not going to blame LeBron here. We're not going to blame LeBron.
I'm not blaming him. 8 points a quarter shouldn't be crazy. Let me say this last thing,
and then I'm gonna jump up. This is my problem again. Y'all repeatedly have kept everybody at this standard compared to Jordan, and like it's crazy.
Y'all just compared him to LeBron.
I didn't say anything about LeBron. Just finish your point, Jay,
because I want to say something after you.
Y'all making it seem like they were blown out or they were out of the game, and he didn't even try to bring them back. He played within the fucking game, and that's what he was saying. We were still close. Like the team was flowing. Why would I interrupt that? This is the same reason fucking when Kobe first got in the league and he shot them damn air balls in the playoffs. Niggas ripped his ass because he shouldn't have been doing it at that point. Like, he was playing within the flow of the game. Now, whether y'all say he should have shot more, cool. But y'all are ripping him like he didn't show up at all. Like, I get your point of, like, yeah, we want more from him because we all do. He's a superstar. But what he is saying is, I played within the flow of the game. I didn't take my team out of it. I didn't jeopardize the whole team in the process of it. But y'all want him to – the problem is y'all have been used to seeing players be straight killers on the court. That's what y'all want. That's the only type of player that y'all really want on the court. When that's not what every player has to be. Halliburton's showing y'all that right now. You don't have to be a killer to have a great team and to win games.
100%. But Edwards' game is that.
Yeah.
Hold on. So we honestly don't know what Ant's game is right now. He's still developing. We see attributes that we attract that are attractive to us when it comes to how he plays, how aggressive he is, and how athletic he is, but he's still developing. And I'm saying based off where he is right now and what he's accomplished, we shouldn't really be poo-pooing him at all holistically. Now, in this series, yes, you could talk about how inconsistent he has been in this series in the playoffs and all that, and how in game four he should have done more and they would have probably won that game. There's no excusing that. That's all facts. But when the question about do we need to have a conversation on Anthony Edwards, it's more so we need to start tapering our expectations for this man, or at least talking about him in the light of his era and stop comparing him to the 90s, the early 2000s niggas. I brought up the fact that LeBron talked about making the best play because he said that LeBron is the ultimate. He's probably one of the greatest. Him and Magic Johnson, the greatest team-led players when it comes to, I want to make the right play, regardless if the ball is in my hands or not. I want to make the right play.
I got a question for Doc and Nick. Both of y'all, give me a grade from A to F. How did he play in this past game to y'all?
C minus.
So that was an average game for him.
Below average.
No, C is average.
I said C minus. Nigga, did you not hear the minus? No,
a C is average, nigga. D is below average.
Here's the thing. Ant is in the playoffs, and in the playoffs, the superstars rise up. It's one of the things that people loved about Jimmy Butler when they tried to claim he was a superstar. We talk about it when Curry wins and when he loses. We talk about it with Joker. We expect these guys, as the best players on their team, to go out and get it done. Was Julius Randle shit in the bed? Abso-fucking-lutely. You know who else knew that on the court? Anthony Edwards. And if Anthony Edwards knew that, he knew he had to find a way to win that game, especially after he got all the contribution. I don't know, Nick, but we've seen players do it. We've seen players do it. We've seen a lot of players do it.
At the beginning of this series, before this series started, you tooted your horn about Ant. How all of a sudden now he's nothing? What happened?
I didn't. Between, my viewpoint of Ant has not changed. I still you believe said Ant was it. That I still, guy. I still believe him.
He is. It sounds like you think he average.
What was the question?
I said his play last game was below average. And the question is, do we need to have a conversation about? And I said taper expectations. But I'm talking about taper expectations as far as like Ken is setting up an argument to shit on his accomplishments so far because of how he's playing in this series. I don't think that's how we should grade him. We should go off of all the things he's done so far as at his age. And if you want to compare him to the rest of the legends at that age, that's fine. But for me, I just told you, I started off this whole thing saying I'd rather be early to the party. I think he's destined for greatness. And right now where he's taking this team is way above than what anybody expected at the top of this season. So that's how I'm grading. That's how I looked at him. I thought they could win in six. They clearly are not going to win in six. So I was wrong on that. However, that does not make me think that, oh, Ant ain't going to be good or Ant like Lou is even saying, talking about some, this may be who he is for the next 10 years. That's fucking ridiculous to say that. We shouldn't
it
go.
Could be, but it's possible, though. It's possible. Yeah, it's 100% possible. What he has to do, I threw in the devil's advocate MJ questioning just because we're a debate show. That's the only reason why. But at the end of the day, Edwards, we know it's not a physical thing, right? Like, we know that he has the physical tools to get the job done, right? This might be a mental thing. And I wanted to adjust the LeBron, make the best play type. That's not what they're asking Edwards to do. Edwards is not the primary playmaker. We need you to be the finisher. We need you to be the bucket getter. We need you to be the first option on a championship level team. What they asked LeBron to do, there's only been one or two other players that they've even asked to handle as much as LeBron has done. So when LeBron says, I'm trying to make the right play, it holds a different type of weight.
We killed him for that because we wanted him to be killed.
I'll take you out of it, FIFO. LeBron has always been killed for that.
Can you let him off the hook?
My thing is this:
making the right play, it should never be a wrong thing. There was a statistic that I gave you that put it a thing. It was like when Ant Edwards has over 7 or 8 assists, they're damn near undefeated, or they have a heavily great winning record with that. So they do want. There is no other playmaker on this team but him. Clearly,
but at the end
for
of
this
the day,
team, for this team,
the mold that Ant Edwards' game is in, it is a scorer killer. Why? Because, like you said, he has a first step. He has enough handle. He has a bag. He has a post-up game. He has a pull-up game. He has a three-point shot. He can get to the free throw line. I would say this, right, putting my analytical hat on and say what I love and what I don't love about Ant Edwards' game. The main thing that he has to incorporate to get to that consistency level that we're talking about from a scoring perspective, he got to get the free throw line more often. So that means settling for less threes at times. I understand the era of the basketball that we play in now. I get it. He's shown this season, hey, bro, like I added that to my game. But you got to get to the free throw line. He got to get to the free throw line 10, 12, 14 times a game. He got to be 12 out of 14. But the proof is in the pudding. He won an MVP.
In game five of that Minnesota series, Jimmy Butler scored 17, and we dogged Jimmy Butler like bad, right? So what's the difference? You know, he scored 17 in game five. He made the right plays. He busted his ass.
He hurt. My thing is this. We do got to give credit to OKC, or at least I'm gonna give credit to OKC. I only gave him two games because I thought SGA was MVP, and that's why I only gave him two games. But Because, like, and don't act like Lou, don't act like I was the only one who underestimated OKC. Because I'll see it with you,
nigga. I wouldn't put me in there with you. I'll see OKC to win. All season,
I asked about what's the ceiling for this team, and everybody was like, they were saying it's too young.
Everybody challenged you.
No,
you were by yourself. Don't do that.
Everybody on this panel challenged you. So you said they were. Everybody, pull the tape. No, I'm asking.
Pull the tape.
No, you didn't. Because Ken even went talked about it as far as when I asked every time, how good is OKC? And no, and people kept on telling me that
season you were the most hardest on OKC. That was you. You was the main one saying first round exit.
I didn't say none of that.
There's a possibility they'd be gone the first round.
Thank you. Thank you.
I did not say they had Memphis first round. What would I say that? I said this early on. Can I talk, Lou? Because early on, I kept asking. I was like, bro, they the best. They got the best record in the league. Why isn't anybody saying like they can go far? Because everybody kept on hyping up outside of us. And people was like, they young, they too young, they still haven't gotten their lumps in the playoffs. And I was like, fuck all that shit. They had their lumps last year, and they look like they better this year. They should be based on how everyone's talking.
You were the main one on the panel, Nick, that were saying they can't.
I'm not saying I didn't have them win. I'm not saying that I didn't say that I didn't have them winning, but I'm also the one that said that who else is going to stamp or put their flag with OKC saying they're going to represent the West or they're getting to the Western Conference Finals at least? None of y'all
Ken
niggas
said,
will put money
Ken
on
said
that.
They were good, and Shelton said they were good.
No, you didn't put your fence. I was on the fence.
You was all the way over saying, fuck them.
You're not hearing what I'm saying. I have said who planted their flag to back them. None of y'all niggas will back
them. Y'all do that, though. That's the youngest team. Stop.
Okay, so then now you saying that goofy shit that y'all said earlier in the season to my point.
That don't make up for what you were saying. You were doubting them extremely. Everybody else is giving them a chance.
Because everybody else did. We treated OKC just like the Cavs this year. But that takes me away from my point. My point is to give them their flowers. They doing their damn thing. Jalen got it right. They actually are up 3-1 in the series. It's not like you talking about right now with the Knicks. We still got a chance. The Hart's still beating. But
Josh Hart.
He's still there too. My thing is OKC has done their thing. This may be Sam Presti. This may be what Sam Presti been talking about for 30 years.
Yeah, it is. And people, Nick.
Hey, on that last graphic, I was just peeking into the future. That's all I was doing. So
you ain't shit for that.
That was messed up though, bro. That's so foul.
He jinxed y'all.
Nick's been hurt the whole time.
Yeah. I don't want to get in this conversation between you and about who was supporting AKC, OKC, but I just didn't see any reason why they wouldn't. I didn't want to give them any excuses about them being young. That was my whole thing. And I saw it. Unlike I didn't really see it with the Cavs. But that's neither here nor there. Shout out to OKC. My other thing, Nick, SGA went out and got 40, didn't he?
He did. He did.
He putting numbers up on the board, man. And why ain't Ant putting numbers on the board? That's my thing, bro. One's an MVP, one isn't.
And one got Julius Randle on his team, and one don't. That's what it is.
And Jalen Williams, he's very
interesting. Jalen Williams had 30.
Balling, bro.
He had 34.
Sometimes he be looking like he's looking great.
Yeah, he looked like Birdman brother some days.
Hey, Nick, y'all could use DiVincenzo now though. DiVincenzo was hooping in this game like crazy.
But he's been struggling the whole playoff series.
That was the best version of DiVincenzo's all playoffs.
Yeah, he struggled against the Warriors. I can't remember if he struggled against the Lakers. I don't think he did because everybody ate.
Rudy Gobert is useless.
He didn't play that bad this last game, Nick.
This last game he was useless, famous, bro.
Nick,
he's a Hall of Famer. That doesn't mean he's not useless.
This past game, Nick, he played hard. Now he played.
No, he did not, bro.
That was the best I've seen Rudy
look. Look. Look, Shelton FIFO, he may be a Hall of Famer. He may have played well, but yeah. Nick 100% right. That motherfucker was
useless, bro. Hey, I'm not saying that this guy has game offensively at all. You know what I'm saying? But he's still a Hall of Famer. So, and the reason why I say that is you got to just put a little bit of respect on his name because he's gonna
make his respect was in the Lakers series. That's the respect he got. This series, he is useless because he ain't doing shit to even guard Chet.
Man, he was getting rebounds and putbacks. He was doing. I mean, he kept him. He kind of kept him going a couple times in this game. That's the only thing I'm saying. He made a difference in this particular game. Doris Burke made the comment about the Germans and the French people or something like that. Some crazy comment she made about him when he drove to the basket.
But you're the only one listening to the color commentary.
No. That was all over. I didn't listen. It was on mute.
My thing is, they scored 128 points, Sheldon. He's supposed to be a four-time defensive. He's a Hall of Famer, ain't he, FIFA? That's useless to me if you can't even guard your center, your assignment. Chet was going. I ain't seen Chet look like Harden.
You got Harden. Chet looking good.
Man, Harden still his Chet, assignment. Randall
Chet ain't worth the damn. And Randall, bro, I'm so disappointed in him. He's bro, playing Nick. This is the version of Randall I thought was gonna show up.
Yes.
No, but you know what made it bad? Before the game, they sat down and they asked him. Now I don't give him a lot of credit, but that was a great question. He said, a couple games ago, you played bad and got sat in the fourth quarter. What was the difference between that game and your next game, which you balled out? And basically, he gave this answer like, yeah, I'm in it now. And I expected him to come out and do anything. He did nothing. Was right back on that bench.
He was sitting with the with Stephen A. and before the game talking about, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, bro, 5 points, bro, and that's you it. Lose by two? That's my thing, bro. It's like we over here yelling at Ant, and I get it. But I'm sorry, bro. Julius getting paid a lot of bread to be on that team.
We know who Julius Randle is, though. Like, we're still trying to figure out who Ant is. Yeah. We know who Julius Randle is. Like, we know that. So if he give you 5 points in a must-win game, it's like, okay, that's
no spice. I'm sorry. No, we're not doing that.
That's what I'm saying. How you gonna say we gotta be?
I think you have to do that.
How you gonna say we gotta be accountable for everybody and then not give him?
Oh, I ain't giving him no excuses. I mean,
it's Julius Randle, bro.
Not five. No,
he's a good three at best. He's a good
no spike. I understand that. This is why I picked the Lakers to beat the Wolves in the first round. As a matter of fact, I picked against the Wolves in every round.
Because look, what Ken, you expect him to give you 5 points in a must-win game? That's who Julius Randle is.
Him and Kat is that Batman thing because they both give you great games and then nothing next. So
don't put him in. Like, Kat better than him though.
Kat actually played better.
Five is inexcusable.
We're talking about somebody like Julius Randle. I ain't expecting him to come through in no clutch situations. But it's just not who he is.
All right, that's what he's been doing though.
His paycheck does say differently. I agree with y'all there. But if I gotta depend on Julius Randle, like I think either Q or Cal said in chat, then we're fucked. I can't depend on him to get more than 5 points, bro. That's just who he is.
But that's who they traded for.
That sounds
for.
Insane, Spike.
That sounds
on the Timberwolves.
No.
It's Julius Randle, though. That's on what, the Timberwolves.
What are no. What are Julius Randle's averages?
They are more than 5 points, Ken.
Like
I'm saying, if you had me in the room and you was like, I'm going to kill you if Julius Randle doesn't score over 5 points. Take the over or under. I'm saying let me leave. He ain't gonna score five, bro.
You a lie.
Know that about you. You
so I expect crazy. Him to get five, Lou. Oh,
Nick, you'll put your life on the line. Y'all put your life on the line and say, "Oh, Julius Randle is going
to five. Yes,
yeah, Lou, five is abysmal. I bet on Julius Randle to score 14 points.
Lou, you
14 points, rebounds, assists.
Lou, you just told me Michael Jordan said I can get 8.25. You telling me Julius Randle can't get? He can't get 2.25.
Yeah, Lou. He's playing. His shot volume.
Y'all been seeing this nigga playing New York for years. Y'all know who dude is.
Spike,
if they told me he couldn't score 5 points in the game, I would believe that.
I wouldn't believe that,
Lou. I'm saying, give me 2.25. If he had 2.25, they win this game by 1 point.
He get too many shots not to score 10 points.
That's a shot a quarter.
Julius Randle, bro. No. I'm saying all high stakes.
Can you y'all just like give us something else besides Julius Randle? Because I'm
saying that because y'all are acting like, oh, I would go bet my life on Julius Randle scoring 5 points. And y'all know y'all wouldn't do that. Spike, if you say
over under. His career average is like 15.
Lose. I don't care about his career, bro. One game, your life. What you going to do?
Spike, the reason why is because Julius Randle is way better than 5 point production, bro. Like
on average, yes. And, but if I got to depend on this nigga for one game and it's my life, or him scoring 5 points,
it's inexcusable. It's inexcusable. It's inexcusable.
I ain't disagreeing with that. I'm just saying I can't depend on him to score more than 5 points in a crucial game. I can't depend on that.
That's insane. All right, let's move on. We'll be right back after this break. What do we got up next? We need to talk. We need to talk is coming up next, right after this quick break.
If you're looking for real conversations and motivations to be your best, then you have to check out Another Week in the Books. Another Week in the Books with Spike Lou and Rich is your go-to podcast for growth and community. Plenty of dope conversations take place week to week as they inspire each other to be better through conversations. Another Week in the Books, wherever you get your podcast.
We need to talk. For this version of We Need to Talk, I want to bring up Indiana Pacers head coach Rick Carlisle. We need to talk about how he should get more respect as a head coach. I had to talk about how much I respect him and his head coaching ability based off just watching this series alone. Granted, you could also just argue off the fact of he's been to back-to-back conference finals in Indiana. And I think I'm not sure how quick he's made this turnaround with Indiana, but it's been very quickly, at least in my mind, since Tibbs got to be the head coach of the Knicks. So I just want to give him his flowers. He's a championship winning head coach. He deserves that more than a lot of other championship head winning coaches who are currently still in the league. The way he's developed his young players, the way he's got this team humming to where Halliburton doesn't even have to be a Jalen Brunson, where it means the whole offense runs through him. The team is the offense, essentially. And like I mentioned before the series, they're like a flood that, or they're like a faucet that doesn't turn off. They're eventually just going to flood you with points, as you can see right now what's happening in the fourth quarter in this series in game four. I think that we have, as a sports show, haven't talked about Rick Carlisle enough as far as his ability to be a great head coach. I think he's a great head coach. So I want to say we need to talk about that, and we need to put him up in the top five of head coaches right now.
I will say this, Nick. The thing I've always loved about Rick Carlisle is the fact that I think everybody has to have an identity as to who they are, how we want to play, but he adapts to whatever he has and just makes the best of it. You know what I'm saying? And I don't think a lot of coaches do that. A lot of coaches have a system like D'Antoni, for example. This is how we play. This is what I do. And that's it. Right. Not everybody could coach this Indiana team to the point of going back-to-back Easter Conference Finals, and Rick Carlisle is a big reason for that. So I don't disagree with giving that man some flowers.
Who did they beat last year to go to the Easter Conference Finals?
Huh?
Who did they beat last year to go to the Eastern Conference Finals?
They beat the Knicks.
Oh. What'd you say, Ken?
He's an NBA champion, right? You said that, right,
yeah.
Nick?
Yeah. With Dallas.
Yeah. Oh, when they beat the Heat.
Yeah.
Rick Carlisle is a coaching version of like the Pacers, of a small market team. You know, they go out, they win, but it's just something about them. They just don't get the credit.
Well, I heard he's an asshole, like as a person. That's what they
media
that's why
doesn't like him a lot. So that's why he don't get coverage like he should.
So he's kind of like Pop.
But people love Pop. But Pop,
even worse, people accept what Pop does.
Remember, he's they did that first.
Asshole. Yeah, they didn't at first. You're right.
Yeah, they hated Pop first.
That, and then what he does, they're like, oh, he ain't even good with people. Like, Pop was a good people person. He's not even like, able to talk to people and them not walk away saying, oh, you're an asshole.
Exactly. Because at least Pop, like, behind, like, outside of the cameras, like, people have talked people about all the stuff he's done for them. Yeah, like, he's done, like, he's a good person. Mm-hmm. He do this and that. Got you don't hear shit about what Rick Carlisle do. Yeah. He just coach basketball and go home, essentially. But yeah, give him his flowers right now. You know, him and that squad ain't shit.
All right, moving on. Let's talk about some NFL. We got some coffee for Spike. Quarterback Caleb Williams. Oh, yeah, was so concerned about being picked by the Chicago Bears in 2024 that he and his family considered defying the entire NFL draft process. They consulted with a lawyer to explore ways around the least collective bargaining agreement, while also considering Williams signing with the United Football League. So laid out in an upcoming book by Seth Wickersham titled American Kings, A Biography of the Quarterback. What are your thoughts on what could have potentially happened in last year's draft? And does this change your opinion of Caleb Williams? No. And also, I mean, just to add on this part, because I know it was a conversation we were having too, does this situation make the Shedeur Sanders conversation seem misguided in hindsight, given the extreme measures the Williams family was willing to take to set Caleb up for success?
No and no. My standpoint and viewpoint on Caleb Williams doesn't change. We all saw the tape. He didn't want to go to a situation that never had a 4,000-yard passer, that can't get head coach right, that can't get the offense right. I don't blame him for that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just a business move. Obviously, you know, it played out where that's where he's at anyway. You know, say you can't turn down the guaranteed millions. So it is what it is. I don't look at Caleb in the situation any differently. And I also don't look at Shedeur any differently either, because I still feel that some of the things that Deion did, said, and what they didn't do cost them in the end. Right, because Caleb, we knew guaranteed he was the number one pick. Shedeur, we all felt he was a first round talent, but nobody here ever thought, oh, he's the first pick in the draft. Like, he never had that cement next to his name. That being said, you should throw at the combine. You should, you know, there's certain things that he should have done that maybe would have helped him in a situation. But at the end of the day, we all agreed it was a little deeper than rap. And I don't think anything that Shedeur would have done would have helped him that much more. Like, it is what it is. They had it out for him, but it's a perfect way to write his story. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think he's going to win that Cleveland job, and I think he's going to prove a lot of naysayers wrong and then hit him over the head when it's time for contract negotiations. But it's just business. It's the money side, and I think Caleb was just trying to protect his long-term interests.
I think it changes my view of him, because I thought highly of Caleb, and it just changes the way it sours it a little bit for me, because I didn't need to know this stuff. Even if that was happening, we don't need to know it. You do what you had to do. You passed it at this point. You are on the team. And there was no threat of him going to some other league. There was no threat of trying to take legal action. You can't fight the powers that be. You're going to take that first pick. You're going to get that money. And that's what you're going to end up doing. You're going to have to make the best of it. And that's what he did. And that's what I knew he would do. That's what else could you do? And I don't want to hear excuses. Now, at this point, you got the offensive coach that you needed in here. I don't care why your season went like it was. Take that blame, eat it, and move forward with your life. You know what I'm saying? At this point, that's what they should have done. It seems like to me they're just trying to find scapegoats, blaming everybody. Oh, he didn't have this. He didn't have that. This is why it looked like that. It don't matter.
When you say trying to find a scapegoat, who are you talking about?
They were looking at the coaching staff last year and saying different things, like he didn't get the
Caleb Williams film. Or the Bears.
Caleb Williams was saying it about the Bears. They said that they didn't give him film to study. They didn't do this. They didn't do that. They shouldn't have went there. It's saying all this stuff that don't matter at this point. Here we are now. Where are you going to go from this point forward? We know you didn't have the right coach. We knew that already. At this point, what are you going to do moving forward? And as far as Shedeur goes,
they still create narratives, you know, be it whatever. They said that the signing bonus was something, and then he bought this car, which he put out today. That wasn't even my car. I didn't buy that car. It's not even mine. Y'all just putting stuff out there still about me. So it's always going to be that. He just got to play football and keep his head down. That's what I would say about him.
Even though the book is about Caleb Williams, I don't think this is a Caleb Williams thing. This is the team, the Bears or the reporter, them trying to make dudes or sell books. But this shit old. Like Sheldon said, we seen, like, bro, you play for them already. We don't really care about the draft decision and going into how you were thinking about playing for them, because none of that stuff happened. What happened was you got drafted by the Bears. Now you're playing for the Bears, and you want to make sure that you aren't one of those quarterbacks that you mentioned in the book and you said, oh, this is a place where quarterbacks go to die. No one cares about that now. So I'm wondering, like, why is this out? Like, in a similar vein to what Sheldon talking about, I know that Caleb Williams people didn't put this out. I know the Bears people didn't put this out. So is this just to sell books? For us to look at it like, oh, you should look at Caleb Williams in a different way. We not. We only care about how you play on the field. I really do not care that this stuff was going on behind the scenes, and now you're telling me about it a year and a half later. He already played for the Bears. None of this stuff that you're talking about happened. So like, what are we talking? I don't think it's good or in good faith that this came out.
Well, what do you mean none of this stuff happened? Because Colin Cowherd is soon last year, like he talks about it where he had somebody on the inside and they gave him this information. He reported on it last year when it was fresh. And obviously, you know, some people call it speculation.
Uh-huh. Who does Caleb Williams play for?
No, we understand that. But at the end of the day, a lot of the reservations he had were true.
That's fine, but he still
okay.
He didn't go through on any of the things that he was talking about. So why do we care?
Talking like, about
yeah, we know the Bears. We know the Bears are a shitty organization when it comes to quarterbacks. Everybody on this panel, it don't matter how old you are, we've seen that throughout the years. But he didn't take any steps to be like, oh well, I'm not going to make the Bears draft me. It's only an article or a passage in a book now. We don't care that you thought that. You didn't do anything about it. Why
should he try to? That's the so my thing is this. I'm of two things. His family did. One, does this make me look at Caleb differently? Y'all already knew how I felt about Caleb kind of going into the draft anyway, but I'm gonna say no because of how I originally felt. However, people were talking about the NFL sending a message to Shador Sanders about like, oh, we're going to make sure that this young buck knows who really is in charge and all the other stuff. And this is why he got drafted in the fifth round. Yet last year, when legit we have like the family spoke up to this reporter, and this book isn't just about Williams, this is about quarterbacks in general. But the family spoke to the reporter and said, and especially his daddy. His dad is the one who has a lot of quotes in this book about what they were about to do, which would have changed the whole league, period, as far as the draft process. Because they ended up submitting to it. Yes, you're right, Lou, it didn't happen. But the fact that all this was going to happen and this was in the works is insane, because no one has ever really done it like this. Even Eli and them haven't even went that far with this. So for me, this just goes to show you that, one, if they really feel you that talented, no matter if you want to go there or not, they're going to draft you. And they're going to give you all this money and give you all this support if they really want you. In comparison to what happened this year with Sador, clearly they didn't want him. So there's that one. Two, what I don't understand is even though I didn't change my opinion on Caleb, how can other people not change their opinion on Caleb based off of this? Because to Sheldon's point, if you that guy, you that guy. Just because the Bears are the number one pick because they're a shitty team. I thought that
they weren't the number one pick because they were the shitty team. They made a great trade.
They still picked in the top 10, so they were still a shitty team. But you're right, they weren't the number one pick. But my thing is,
what about the opinion of Caleb changes though?
Because coming if you're known as the best player in the draft, I thought number one pick meant that you were like, that's a great thing to be. You know what I'm saying?
That goes to his point, though. That's the Bears. That ain't me. That's the Bears. Like, y'all kept this dude that wasn't a good coach in position. Y'all didn't make the moves that needed to be made for me to come in and be successful right off the rip. It's on the Bears. It's not on me. Everything I'm saying in this book,
that's professional football, Lou. It's not like college where you can cater and curate your own legacy and all that stuff.
They kind of did cater to him too, though, Nick, didn't they? Because they brought in all those players. They catered to him.
That was after the fact, right? That was after the fact. Like Lou said, he came into the situation knowing the coaching staff. Everybody and their mama knew the coach staff should probably have been fired beforehand, yet they didn't do it. Everybody and their mama knew that they didn't really have a great offensive line. Everybody and their mama know that going into that, they didn't have the best weapons in the league, period. Like, it wasn't a great situation to go to the Bears. But that's football. When you get drafted number one, you go into the shitty team, which means they didn't win a lot of games, which means they probably a dysfunctional organization for the most part. So my thing is, like, fuck all that shit. And that's why I have high expectations for Caleb now more than ever based off of this. Because it's like, okay, you clearly want things to be catered to you in a way to where you have your best foot forward. Anybody would, of course. But when you're talking about this professional level, you just go where you're slotted at, and you make the best of your situation, especially as a quarterback.
Mm-hmm. And they set it up. This was one of the better situations to go to outside of the coach, which is a huge part of that. But as far as the team is concerned, you put him in position to win. You brought in you had three good, really, really good receivers. You had a good running game. He did need a better offensive line, but he was still in a better position than most number ones are. So I can't say, you know, it was just terrible.
But it goes beyond. They've been historically bad, Shelton. They never had a passer to pass for more than 4,000 yards in the history of the Bears.
But they had three. They had three. Arguably, could have been number one receivers on other teams. So at this point, they set it up to where it was going to be successful. We talked about it. They were a quarterback away, according to most, because Fields wasn't it. So you bring him in, this is the opportunity for you to shine. When you look at the other situations, the cupboard was not bare here. He had enough stuff to where it could work. And even if it wasn't all that, your goal is always to be the number one pick, correct? That's what I always thought. So I don't see what the issue would have been.
Well, the issue is here, right? And there's a game that that highlights the whole microcosm of what the Chicago Bears were last year. It was Thanksgiving. It was against the Lions. And we saw that entire debacle, how it played out. They had timeouts, didn't use them. And that isn't on a young QB, even though he was questioning, like, well, should I call it? Should I not? This, then, the third. That's the first red flag, because your coaching staff should empower you, regardless if you're old, young, or journeyman or whatever, to control the game, right? That's number one. Number two, the head coach didn't do it. Number three, that game had major implications, and you should have won that game. There were a lot of games that they should have won, but they didn't. You know another head coach that came in last year and they rectified all of that? That boy Harbaugh over there with the LA Chargers, a better team, won those close games. You know another head coach that came in and rectified a lot of those issues that we saw a year pre- Sean Payton. That's what good head coaching does. It doesn't necessarily guarantee you to win anything, but we know that we're not going to lose because of preparation. And that was the issue with the Bears last year, was preparation.
All right, well, we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this.
If you are a fan of hip-hop and love unfiltered discussions on the culture, check out Dead in Hip-Hop. From album reviews to hip-hop debates, Dead in Hip Hop always keeps it real. Go to youtube.com/Dead in Hip Hop and search for Dead in Hip Hop or DEHH to subscribe now. Dead in Hip Hop, no politics, no BS.
While the NFL is currently going through its offseason schedule, NFL executives held their annual meeting where new rules and policies can be made to help make the regular and postseason games more fun and interesting. This year, the Philadelphia Eagles tush push was potentially going to get banned, but it wasn't. However, there were other rule changes made that will have a huge impact on the upcoming season. what's everyone's thoughts on these new rules? Some examples are onside kicks can now occur in any quarter. NFL players can compete in Olympic flag football. Touchbacks can come out to the 35-yard line. And playoff overtime rules now also apply to the regular season.
Me personally, I hate the 35-yard line on the touchback because you're already starting out at a plus. You get one first down, you at midfield. That's too much, man. These are NFL offenses. They move the ball anyway. Starting at the 30 was too much for me. It should be 25, like regularly. It started 20 back in the day, and now it's up to 30, now then 35. That's too much, man. You're giving too much leeway to the offenses. It used to be 10 years ago, a penalty on the kickoff would get you to the 40, which was ridiculous too. But we're making it so easy for the offenses that it's not fun. You gotta be able to get there. That rule I'm not in favor of. The others are okay. I wish we can go back to the regular kickoffs. That was more exciting all day for me than this new kickoff rule that we have now, this new kickoff system that they use. The other stuff is whatever. It don't really matter. But those were the ones that affected me the most.
Which is like they should have banned a tush push.
I was only gonna because y'all know me, I'm neutral on the tush push because everybody can do it, and also you can stop it if you just score points. But my thing is what you were saying, Shelton, all these new rules is all heavily favored offenses.
Yeah,
it doesn't like there's nothing about any of these rules that give a defense a chance,
right?
And it was already hard. So to me, it's like what Lou was going with it is like I can see them eventually banning the tush push to give something to the defense. Because I know if I'm a defender or if I'm a defensive coordinator, it's like, bruh, y'all basically going to say that the touchback is going to be at the 50-yard line eventually.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, what the fuck do we get?
Don't kick the ball in the end zone. Like, it's simple.
But then you're
acting like it's a big deal, but don't kick the ball in the end zone.
The whole point is if we don't kick the ball in the end zone, that means that we're giving the opponent an opportunity to run it back for either good to great field position or a touchdown.
That's a better football.
I'm saying it's a lose-lose situation, Lou. I'm not saying I disagree.
What the NFL is deciding these things on is how does it look from a football standpoint? And it's not just me being a hater on the tush push. That too is a bad football play. So when we're talking about kicking the ball in the end zone, you have kickers and you can train them and tell them, kick it here, as to where they won't get a touchback and they got to run it back. And we got the defense to stop that and they won't get to the 35, 45-yard line. Just like with the tush push, it's a bad football play.
How is the tush push a bad football play?
It's ugly because that's not football.
That's rugby.
It's not rugby, it's football, bro.
It is rugby, bro. If you line it up in a scrum and pushing people forward because you got people in the backfield and your quarterback,
that's part of football.
It's not a different version of a goal line play. It's not. There's no way you're going to be able to explain it.
That's rugby players say it's not rugby.
There's no other football play like that.
Okay.
You're right.
There's no other play like the Statue of Liberty. Should they ban that?
Leaf liquor. There are plenty of plays like the Statue of Liberty, bro. It's a delayed pass play. There are other plays like that. There's no other play like – yeah, you right there at the quarterback, not having anybody behind you push you and having some rugby scrum, and this is the NFL. It's not rugby. The Patriots were good very much so at the quarterback sneak. They didn't need somebody pushing Tom Brady. What the Eagles are doing and what this play is different from football. And that's the reason they're trying to ban it. Y'all can say I'm a Cowboys fan and I hate the Eagles because I do. That's a fact. But it still ain't a football play, though. It's not. There's no other play in football that looks like it. Nick even put in the chat, he was like, oh, well, you should only be able to do this a certain amount of times in the game. That lets you know that it's not a football play.
Man, you tripping, Spike.
That was my compromise, Sheldon. It was more like I don't want it to be eliminated.
Football play.
But like you should use it like timeouts. You should only get three times you can do it a game. And that would, and to me, that would make the
now game we're limiting. He, now we're limiting a play.
Look, I'm just saying. I'm just saying, FIFA. That would make the tush push play even more exciting because it's like, oh, you can only do this a few more times. You know what I'm saying?
No. This is the issue with trying to limit and do what you're doing, or if they implement what you're saying. Like you said previously, any team can do it, but to do it with success, you have to have the right players to do it.
Right,
I don't right. Make it so, right. So why are we limiting? Like, no, it's a football right. play.
You're saying, oh,
it's a we're football able to do it. And if you want to run that shit 100 times a game, run it 100 times a game. If you think that that's how you're gonna win, what are we talking about? Like, the sanctity of the game is go out there and play football and stop another grown man. This. That's football.
You watch football, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know you do. If you've mm-hmm. seen a team doing that 15, 20, 30 times a game, you wouldn't be upset about that?
You know what? My thing is like this. It's like
you already lost because
it's like the Hackershack.
I'm asking you a simple question.
It's like Hackershack. But if that's a strategy, then it is what it is.
Before you're watching a football game and they do this 30, 40 times. A game because it works, like Sheldon said. Is that enjoyable football watching for you as a fan?
But it doesn't make it a non-football play.
It does make it a non-football
No, it play doesn't,
because,
Spike.
Because dude, if you it have, was you have enjoyable no football say, play, you would enjoy watching it as a fan.
Enjoyable,
you can't tell me a team can line up and do this. If a team lines subjective. Up and does this 30 times a game, you're not going to be
But nobody like, has, though. About
that. They don't do it 30 has. Times. They just so, do it.
So who says they can't? That's the point.
Who
of the
has?
Who says they
no,
can?
Who has?
So when the who Eagles has? Line up and say, you can't when like the that. Eagles line up and they say, I'm gonna do this every play.
But what you gonna not, say? Because you can't. Because you can't. Look, first of all, that play gets you what at most 2 yards,
bro, right? I can't stop.
But it gets you 2 yards.
I do it 50 times a game
because you're not gonna get enough yards to win the game.
Yeah, I just do what necessary, Lou. I'm gonna ask him. Yeah,
you're saying that because you're an Eagles fan.
I'm gonna tell
I'm saying this from a football stuff. Perspective. If I lined up and wanted to do that every play to get a first down, I could do it. And y'all know that's true.
It's not. You only get 4 downs. You only get 4 downs, and they get bro, 2 yards.
If I lined up in the tush push 3 times, I'm going to get 10 yards.
No, you're not.
We disagree in that. Then we can agree to disagree.
All right, so moving on, we have worst of the week, and then we got FIFA's power rankings.
Yo, man, my worst of the week is Cat. He was my best of the week, and he's my worst of the week. Let me tell you why he's my worst of the week. It's not what you think, Nick. Don't
mute his
mic.
Mute his
mic. It's not what you think, Nick. He's my worst of the week because I've watched about 14 interviews for Cat in this series. And I've heard him.
Oh my God!
14 different voices, bro. Hey man, can I get an authentic Cat once, please? Please, can I get him authentic one time? I'm tired of this, man. I'm tired of hearing. He had a New York accent a few weeks ago, talking about what's happening at Rucker Park and how it is down there in New York. I'm like, man, come on, bro. Be you, bro. Just be your authentic self. If you're goofy, be goofy. Whatever you are, be that. But I'm just tired of it, man. I'm tired of it, man. So Cat is my worst of the week.
All right. Power rankings.
All right, power rankings. I ain't sending them to Jalen because last week y'all disrespected me. And then put up my shit. So this week, it's fuck all of y'all.
That ain't why. That is not why. That ain't how the show
started. No. I'm just talking shit. I didn't send it in. Because, like, last week, this is not going to be arguable. This is the top 5 small forwards of all time. If your list is different, then your list is wrong. You can move players up and down if you want, but it is what it is. Like, these are the 5. At number 5, we got Scottie Pippen. At number 4, we got Dr. J. At number 3, we got KD. At number 2, we got Larry Bird. At number 1, we got LeBron. Simple as that.
Okay. All right.
No questions asked.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. KD.
KD's 3rd.
Who do you have over him, Sheldon?
It's fine because you can't name nobody that need to be on the list that ain't.
Wait, you said Scottie Pippen is five.
Scottie, mm-hmm. Dr. J, KD.
Everybody that's supposed to be on the list is on the list.
On the list.
I could argue Kate. I could argue Scottie could be moved up.
That's fine. The list is still the five that he named. I think that's the main thing.
That is the five.
Yeah. Why would you move Scott? You would move Scottie above Dr. J?
I move Scottie above. Yeah, I would have to because of his defense and the fact that he won these championships. Scottie was integral in those championships.
He no 100%. But individually, he, in my opinion, he wasn't better than Dr. J. And individually, he's not better than KD. Offensively, defensively, true. Yes. That's but he's not better.
Well, he was a better all around player than both of them.
KD's arguable. Dr. J, I give you
that. It ain't even arguable. KD ain't playing the type of defense that Scottie Pippen plays. Scottie Pippen would guard the best player on the other team every night.
I just gave you that.
Be the second best player.
I just gave you that. I think Pippen's better defensively than both of those guys. But KD, when you needed to, could hold his own. But he was never like a lockdown, shutdown defender. But he was a guy that you could just couldn't get buckets on. Like he wasn't a weak link in defense. Like KD's never been that. You know what I'm saying? So, but his offense far outweighs what Scottie Pippen's was, and then he has the individual accolades that Pippen doesn't. So that's why those two guys are above Pippen. But you can make the argument that Pippen should be number three. You could make that argument.
He's not.
I'm not mad with it.
He's not.
Yeah, I obviously didn't put him there. But yeah, y'all cool with the top two? Bron and Bird.
Yeah, I mean Melo should have been on the list, but that's just my personal list.
He's right outside the top 10 though, in my opinion.
Who, Melo?
Yeah.
Outside of the top 10?
Wait, you said outside the top 10?
That's no. Yeah. That's what I meant. Outside of top five, he's in the top 10.
I respect
that. All time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For what?
What do you mean for what?
He's like right around 10-9.
He's number six on that list.
Wait a minute. On what? The small forward list?
On the small forward, he's number six. Oh,
come on, man. Y'all know.
He's number six.
He's higher than James Worthy.
Ken.
He's number six.
Are you going to say something about this kid?
I really do like Carmelo Anthony as a player. I was a fan of him coming out of
Syracuse. That nigga ain't better than Kawhi.
So I
thank you.
That nigga ain't better than Kawhi.
Kawhi's a small forward.
Yes. Well, who are the 10 though? But the argument is him questionably being it. Oh, well, you're talking about Nick put him at six. Yeah, I'm not arguing that.
Because Doc, if you want to be like that, Dr. J shouldn't be at four in the top five. Kawhi should be over Dr. J.
You bugging? Yeah, you wilding. You wilding big time. Like really huge time.
I'm just saying if he's not,
I'm gonna tell you what.
Scottie is ahead of Melo too. So
most lists, I didn't say he wasn't.
Most lists say
10, if he makes 10.
LeBron James, Larry Bird, Kevin Durant, Elgin Baylor, Havlicek, Julius Erving, Scottie Pippen, Kawhi Leonard. Then you got Rick Barry, Paul Pierce. I put Paul Pierce above
Dominique.
Mello too. Dominique as well. James Worthy.
Yeah, Paul Pierce is definitely above Mello.
Chris Mello is not no six.
Mello's not no six.
Chris Mello. You name the names of Hoopers now. I can't speak on Havlicek or Elgin Baylor other than what I hear, but. Still,
Knicks don't deserve Pierce. To be talked about right now. Anyway, we need to let Paul them Pierce go. Go
we ain't talking about the Knicks. We talking about Melo.
We talking you caving for him because he was a Knick. So any Knick needs to
Paul Pierce.
I'm caving for him because he's Carmelo. I ain't got nothing.
He was a great scorer, but that's about where it is.
Huh?
Paul Pierce first Melo. Who you got?
I'm taking Melo. Outside of LeBron, MJ, and Kobe, I'm taking Melo.
You talking about NBA champion Paul Pierce?
Yeah, I'm right. Yes.
Nick, Paul Mello Pierce was.
I know Paul
Pierce was a cold.
I remember when Paul Pierce was young, when he was at the Celtics, he was giving the business to Indiana back in the day with, what's his name, Al Harrington and them motherfuckers. Yep. I remember that Paul Pierce. My Paul Pierce was getting busy. He had supreme old man game with that slow-ass.
It wasn't Al Harrington. It was Antoine Walker.
It was Antoine Walker.
Antoine Walker. Yeah, that was a dude.
No, Antoine Walker didn't play with them.
I thought Al Hunter was on that Pacers team that he played with.
No, Antoine Walker was the Antoine Walker and Paul Pierce were the two before.
Yeah, it was Walker and Paul Pierce.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about
Al Harrington. I think what he was saying against the Indiana Al Harrington.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, against the Pacers. But Paul Pierce had that slow ass step back.
Man, it's
legendary.
What is Jay doing?
Bro, Doc, you mute his mic, man.
Doc, you got a robot voice.
This nigga chopped and screwed his voice.
Oh, my fuck up, man.
I don't know what he's talking about. Even his computer went against his tape.
That Timu mic.
Damn.
Oh man, the fucking entity, bro! What the hell? Oh, shit!
He had to. Oh, they were shitting on the Mission Impossible movie, Ken.
They should.
Ooh. Oh,
everybody.
Yeah, should. Man. Yeah,
that's
man.
Foul. They shouldn't do that. That movie was long as hell. But you ain't never gonna see an action movie like that.
Nick,
you ain't
never gonna try to change the subject. Now, what's the score of the game tonight? Stay on topic. Mm.
The Knicks lost. The Knicks lost.
So
it was 120. It ain't over until it's over, Lou.
Jalen tried to tell you.
So y'all coming back?
It's not over yet.
I've said this multiple times. This is gonna be one of the greatest comebacks since the Cavs versus the Warriors.
Halliburton finished the night with 32, 15, and 12.
Ain't gonna do the same thing.
Shout out to that punk ass nigga. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, Nick, the series isn't over. It's not over in the least bit. It's not over until the team gets four.
Right.
Yeah.
It's over.
But it's hilarious as hell. The shit you were talking about Tyrese Halliburton.
I know. That make me hate him even more. That's the thing. I keep telling y'all, I don't move off my points. I don't move off as far as like how I feel about somebody. I hate this. Is cementing my hatred. That's how I know I'm a Knicks fan, because my Indiana hatred is now cemented. Because I used to fuck with them back when they had Paul George. Ah, hell nah. Anytime I see orange and gold. Hey, Doc, if you ever wear some alpha colors around me, I might punch you in the face. I might think...
Well, I can still hear that robot.
Wow, Chief Miyagi said he had... that's funny. Chief Miyagi said he had zero turnovers.
That's crazy.
This is what I be telling y'all. He has like top three all time already, and he's only played less than 250 games total.
Zero
and the
turnovers.
Other players on that list played thousands, if not 800s of games. And this is why I say, is ugly as his game is, because it's not pretty whatsoever. Like, he's herky jerky. It's not aesthetically pleasing. He is as efficient as a point guard can be, and it doesn't matter if he scored that 30 points, because if he didn't score the 30, he would have got more assists. And then with zero turnovers, Ken, in a playoff, and we know how a Thibodeau team plays defense.
Yeah, and he got four steals, 2 feet. But the first two possessions of the second half were Halliburton steals. They were up five. That's when they took the count that got the cushion to the lead. The first two possessions, he got steals. So four steals, zero turnovers. Man, this guy had an all around crazy game. That's why I can't.
His plus minus must be ridiculous.
Plus 16. I don't understand how people are saying that the series with him against OKC wouldn't be good. How could it not be?
Yeah,
they're gonna get slaughtered. That's what they're gonna have. I'll
tell you this.
So you want me? I'll be the biggest OKC fan.
You just might, Cam. You just might, Cam. You just might, Cam. Look, no, they're not, but they can, and it comes down to coaching, because.
I'm listening. That's just a funny ass sentence.
I know. OKC, if they keep this, OKC's better in the half court than what Indiana is. And we've seen that times when New York slows the pace and they make it a grinded out type style of game, Indiana struggles because they don't have the primary score. Siakam's nice, but Siakam's a third scorer on a championship team. Tyrese Halliburton is not a primary scorer on a championship team. They don't have one. So in a half court, you can stifle their offense. It with But OKC, because they're young and they also play good fast because they play defense and they score off of turnovers, even though Haliburton isn't going to give you many, the others will. If this goes into a track meet, it's a great series. If OKC slows it down and forces them to play a half-court offense, OKC could take advantage of that. So it depends on the coaching. It also depends on the youth, because young players always want to get up and down the court. So that's going to be an interesting matchup if the Pacers, you know what I'm saying, get past the Knicks, as they should, because they're up 3-1.
I just want to point out, on this program, though, we were, like, high on Haliburton, like, 2 years ago before he got hurt, and that slowed him down. And then we started looking at him a little different. But it seems like he's kind of gotten back to where he was when we were looking at him. Like, dang, did Sacramento mess up by trading him and keeping De'Aaron Fox? It kind of worked out for both until it didn't, because they traded Fox.
They fired Mike Brown, and that was the end of everything.
Because they were next up.
Coaches that hold these young players accountable get on the chopping block first, and then what happens is that they either don't develop right, or you blow it up because now you don't have anything. And we look at Sacramento. What the hell? They're Chicago Bulls West.
They need a trade. They need to move that team. It's getting wasted in Sacramento. They need to move back to Cincinnati.
I don't know what Blotty doing.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't think it's the GM. I think it's the owner.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. They got to move that team. It could be. You don't have all that talent and then just now have nothing.
Yeah,
and everybody else flourishing damn near.
And they had it, but they had it. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Finish the sentence.
Now that's all. I was just gonna say they had a bunch of accumulated talent. You had a number one, and you had a nice point. They had everything.
We try to uplift black men and try to support each other. Y'all just like seeing me upset.
Oh shit, that's funny. Hey, now I wanted this for you, Nick. You know, I picked the Knicks. I didn't know this was gonna happen.
Me too.
I do want you guys to like have your moment, like, because I remember I'm so glad I don't have a team, because I don't have to deal with any of this shit. But I remember the feeling of when the Rockets won their title, bro. It is a feeling and a joy that it's hard to replace. And
Tell Nick about it, Ken, because he ain't gonna know this.
So, this nigga over here laughing and giggling like he don't root for the Hornets.
I do root for the Hornets. Hey, Nick, that's why I'm laughing, because y'all gonna be sitting right beside me.
It's not over yet. We're gonna get one more Go New York Go in the chat, Shelton.
We are. Yeah, listen,
we might get three if we lucky.
One more big bone.
We get big fucking balls, nigga. You damn near might answer the door, Shelton. You think it's somebody there?
Hey, Shelton. Oh, is that what you just said, Shelton? Yeah, they did the bing bong and stuff. Yeah. I was like, what is that? That's not signature, bro. How you gonna do a rebrand?
Bing bong. Yeah.
I thought, because I didn't even think they won when I saw that bing bong. What the fuck is that? Yeah. Hell, you got all white on us, bro. You've been up there too long. Bing bong. Oh, man.
That's what the New Yorkers say, Ken. I'm out here with them. Well, I ain't with them in the streets. I said I was going to go to one of these games, bro. So they started losing. I was like, I ain't about to waste my money.
That's why you go.
I ain't wasting my money going to New York.
They ain't have no business throwing that trash on that Pacers fan. If they had left him alone, this might be a different series.
He deserve it. Don't come here thinking you're gonna be nigga. This is New York. Fuck off.
I'm not gonna lie though. That the last few minutes of that game, Nesbitt, right?
Yeah,
they hit all those threes.
Mm-hmm. Neesmith.
I knew it was Ness something. Neesmith. That is a playoff moment. Y'all hear me?
Like, that was the series. Yeah. That's the defining moment in the series.
That was cold blooded because where it came crazy. From.
Yeah, man, I wanted to rewind and watch it back because I was like, Jesus Christ!
I damn near cried myself to sleep that night.
I'm so glad I wasn't you, bro.
Yeah. Ooh.
Anyway, super chats. Yeah. We the boys. OKC has heart. They're going to win the chip.
agree.
Unless you talk to Q and
they look should.
Like it. Yeah.
I hope they
I don't see nobody beating them. Especially with how SGA playing. No.
Yeah.
What the calls he's getting, but that's another conversation.
Green Bean, start, bench, or cut? CJ2K, Clint Portis, or Ricky Williams?
I'm going to start
CJ2K.
Yeah.
I'm
going to start CJ. If we talking their best seasons, we got to start CJ2K. Clint Portis would be the one I would bench and cut Ricky Williams.
You're cutting Ricky?
I'm cutting Clint Portis, bro.
I'm cutting CJ.
I'm with Sheldon. I'm starting CJ. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. I'm starting CJ2K. I'm cutting Ricky Williams, and Clint Portis is my backup.
Look, and I'm from Miami. You know what I'm saying? This is going to sound blasphemous, but I'm cutting Clint Portis. I'm starting Ricky Williams, and I'm benching CJ2K. Ricky Williams, his best season Ricky was Williams with the Dolphins.
Had 2,000 yard season?
He had 1,800.
Does he have a 2,000 yard season though?
Commutative with catching, he does. that year he had 1,800 yards rushing.
CJ Tucker had 2,000 yards. Eight people that did it.
I feel.
Hey, what happened after that though, Lou?
Yeah,
thank you.
It don't matter.
That's why I'm cutting.
Talking about their best season.
No,
it's eight people that did that.
They didn't say that. They just said start, bench, cut. I'm starting Ricky Williams. I'm putting Clint on the bench. CJ ain't do shit. Hey, kid, that next season, what he do, Lou?
Bro.
2,000 yards. What are y'all talking about?
Yeah, 2,000 yards. 1,300 the next year, Nick.
The crazy thing, he fell off a cliff.
This fall up, man. It was hard, bro.
He fell off
a cliff. He didn't fall off, man. Yes, he was 1,000 yards.
He was out the league.
He was 5 years after that.
He was out the league. He was out the league by that third year.
No. He rushed after the 2,000 yard season. He rushed for 1,005 years in a row. He didn't fall off until the sixth year.
Thank you.
But either way, if we're benching somebody, that means that they're coming in after the running back, right? The starting running back, because multiple running backs play in a game. Ricky Williams was the most physical out these three. He's going to beat that defense up for you. Then you're going to have this 4-2 speed wide running back just run around everybody. So that's the reason why I would start Ricky. Let him pause, pound out that defense. You know what I'm saying? Pound the rock. And then you bring in it's Thunder and Lightning, man. That's the perfect combo. It's Thunder and Lightning.
Y'all sleeping on Clinton Portis, bro.
Yeah,
Clinton Portis. Clinton was nice.
Portis was a beast.
He was consistent too.
Man, if Ricky didn't do
Rick was doing all that. Don't blame the weed. Don't blame the weed. It wasn't the weed, man.
Yeah. The best running back of these three is CJ2K.
No, he's not. It's Ricky.
No, he's not.
It would be Ricky. Ricky should have been the best. Put it that way.
It should have been. Could have been. Would have been records. It don't matter. The only one that had a 2,000 yard season was CJ2K.
Mm-hmm. He did fall off though. I remember.
He fell. He got tired. Because I was right there with you.
Easy, Lou.
Only eight running backs have done that.
He got tired.
I was with you, Lou. When he had that 2,000 yard season, he was a dog. Sure.
Lou, who did it last?
I don't know. Move on, Ken.
Elijah, specifically for Ken and chat. What's up with this Jordan hate now? Is it cool to hate Jordan now? Am I hating on Jordan? Let me also add this part. He said, and yes, I know there were other great players in the Jordan era. I'm 25. I wasn't there to experience late 80s and 90s NBA. Yes, I'm going to do homework and watch it on YouTube and other services.
No,
if I was hating on Jordan, it comes from a very honest place because I was not a fan like that. Jordan beat everybody that I liked. I was a Clyde Drexler fan, took them out. He took out the Sonics, right? Yeah. I wanted Barkley to get one, took them out, bro. Man, and it's just the hatred just built from there. And then I hated Carmelo in Utah. I didn't care about that one. And then I really messed with Detroit too. So it was good for a while, and then it wasn't. So, and the Lakers would beat him, and then he beat the Lakers. Man, it was just like, bro, it was just like, what's going on, bro? I hated that Mark Price shot.
I was a Jordan fan. I do think, though, as time is going on, probably in the next 10, 15 years, somebody, and I'm maybe even Q, will, people are going to start moving like these current players up in rankings where we never thought they were going to be. Like, somebody's going to say Steph is the GOAT in about 10, 15 years, and they should be slapped immediately. But somebody is going to say that. So I do think that the people are going to say Jordan's, the people that Jordan played against weren't that good as how they are. You know, that's, people are making an argument now. They're not as athletic. They're not doing the shooting wise. They're not three-point shooters and all that stuff. The people are going to make arguments for other players as time.
It wasn't as many. And I want to clear up this false narrative that there weren't guys back then. There were guys. Mitch Richmond was a guy.
There was guys all over the, you know, up and down the
board. Allen Houston was a guy. He gave Jordan buckets. Like, there was guys. Mm-hmm. There just wasn't as many guys as there is now. There's more guys now that you have to deal with that have more talent. Maybe they're not as great, but they have more talent. Like, every roster has talent. Where back then, I could pull up a roster and there's hella gaps. Like, there's a big drop off.
But see, FIFO, I would beg to differ. I would think a lot of the mid level guys back then, I put them on the roster against some of these top guys now, and they would take them out. You take Chris Mullin, Mitch Richmond, guys like that. These were mid level guys as far as the league is concerned. But you thinking these guys can't ball with these dudes now?
No. Mitch and both Chris Mullin could definitely ball. Like, we're talking about one of them was on the Dream Team, and the other one is in the Hall of Fame. So you know, you're calling them mid-tier. To me, mid-tier guys don't get to the Hall of Fame. Like, you did something exceptionally well to make it to the Hall of Fame. That's number one. So like, a mid-tier guy for me now, right, like, is a Pascal Siakam. Like, he's not making no Hall of Fame.
But there was definitely a Pascal Siakam equivalent back in the 80s and 90s.
Not at his size. Ooh, not at 6'9", 6'10".
There was what about the Iceman?
Maybe.
George Gervin? Superstar, though.
Horace Grant, Pascal Siakam.
Hell no. No. Pascal has more talent than Horace Grant.
True. But they Pascal can take off the dribble.
Exactly. You said what? Yeah. What's right?
I said true. I think they played the same role, though. Because you would for have their games. Team, you would have games where Grant option. Scored 24 or 25 points.
And barely.
Barely. Barely. You're right. It wasn't often. But I think
Eddie Johnson. Pascal Siakam.
Siakam is the
evolution of Horace Grant.
But the prime thing is this. Back then, because of the way that the game was played, those guys were dependent scorers. Horace Grant was dependent on Scottie Pippen, Tony Kukoc, and all of those other, B.J. Paxton, to get him the ball, and all he was catch and shoot. These guys now, like Blake Griffin back in the day, get the rebound and push. Like, I'm going. The point guard, nigga, you better go over there in that corner and shoot that three when I pass this ball up. That's the difference in the game. But these guys are more talented. They could do more on the floor.
I think the case, though, for me, the reason why I don't think Jordan will be passed up as number one is because if you just look at his career, even just on the court, let alone off the court, but there's hella records that are still being broken that this nigga still got. You know what I'm saying? Like, even when you compare his shit to LeBron, like, as a defender, he's shitting on LeBron. You know what I'm saying? Like,
by far,
outside of just scoring, you know what I'm saying? And the fact that and the thing about the Jordan era, the reason why they say it, it's because he shut the door on a lot of niggas who were Hall of Famers, 100%. Like people said, and they didn't get a ring because of him. Whether it's because they was in the East or because they met him in the finals. A lot of people now look at this. We about to get another NBA champion that never won a title before or hadn't won a title in a long time this season. And it's been like that every year for the last 6-7 years, whatever, however long. So Jordan era didn't have that.
Well, Bron's out of his prime, though, so I don't know if we're not in the Bron era anymore.
We're not. It's transitioning. But, and I don't want to make this MJ versus Bron, because that is number one, number two, wherever you want to put them, it is what it is. But Jordan doesn't, outside of like yearly awards, like Defensive Player of the Year and all of that, if we're talking individual statistics, there's nothing defensively that Jordan has more than LeBron. Like, LeBron is in the top fucking 50 in every like category. Obviously, he's number one scoring. I think he's in the top 10 in assists. He's in the top 20 in rebounds. Like, he's in the top whatever in steals. Like LeBron, and then in blocks. Like D Wade has surpassed MJ in blocks. So let's not even talk about LeBron. So at the end of the day, those are number one and number two. Like there are stats that nobody's ever going to surpass LeBron on. Like, have you ever looked at his minutes played? Like LeBron's minutes played, and that's not even including Olympics. Like, it's like, there's certain things that nobody's ever going to catch LeBron on.
I think there's something to be said about going to what you were saying earlier about the increase in the quality of the players that LeBron has had to play against more than MJ. I also think that, and that, so I think that could play a factor in what happened with him. There are a lot of other things as well, but it's going to be a minute before we see anybody make finals, what, non-straight appearance or whatever it is.
Not going to happen.
Yeah. So that's going to be hard for somebody to accomplish, like, ever. That is an accomplishment within itself. I think, though, what is going to happen, though, Nick, is LeBron will pass MJ. And I think it's going to come down to what people watched. We are going to phase out. You're starting to see it now. And I'm not talking about whether we agree or disagree. I'm just talking about how the culture will move on, how society itself was moving on, how they moved away from Kareem and all them other guys. They are going to move away from MJ. And one of the things that we see, we're done with the 90s. They're already shitting on the quality of players that MJ played against to use that to discredit him. And then they're going to prop up LeBron. LeBron, to a lot of players, these guys younger than us, that's the best they've ever seen, and they don't give a fuck about MJ like that.
Yeah.
And that's,
you know, they're still going to cop his shoes. That's
Yes.
And that's the relevance he's going to have, though.
That's what I was going to say, though, Ken. That's the only reason I disagree. The only reason I disagree is because the ghost of Jordan is greater than Jordan, the player. That's what makes him so great, is because when they talk about him, even if they didn't see him, they just going by what they heard, and they didn't hear nothing about the, like one of y'all was talking about it earlier. We forget those Pistons series when the Pistons was beating them down. We forget all that stuff. When you talk about Jordan, all they talk about is how great he was. This man won, quit, and came back and won. So that's why I think it'll be really hard to surpass. With Bron, like we talked about earlier, Bron takes a heavy amount of criticism, regardless as to what happens, because everything was watched in real time. So I don't think they'll ever put Bron on
age. Age.
I thought the same thing.
Age. But no. I'm telling you. Yeah, I think if you go talk to, and you have high school schoolers, you have high school kids.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think that's gonna move the goalposts. Like, they don't give a fuck about the shoes because the shoes look good. Yeah, I get a pair of shoes and wear them. I don't give a fuck. Yeah. They probably don't even know who this motherfucker is and how good he was on the court, because they don't want to give a damn. It just match whatever they're wearing. But I think that's what I'm saying. I think we'll hold on because that's just us. But I think the generation behind us, that's their Jordan, bro.
I need to.
And Steph is going to be their Jordan.
They're going to say Paul George to go.
They're going to say Paul George.
That's, you know what, I'm glad you said that. Like, we scoffed at somebody even legit saying that shit.
Yeah.
And they truly believed it with their heart. But you can see it now playing out, bro. They already shouldn't know the quality of talent he played against. It's going to happen. And we're going to be in our rocking chairs yelling at everybody, driving around in their flying cars and shit. Mad as hell. But, you know, it is what it is. But that is the show. We appreciate everybody coming through. Come through next Tuesday. Might be good news, might be bad news.
When does the Pacers OKC series start?
I don't know when it start, Sheldon, because I don't know if you're playing 2K or not. This series is still going. By the time we get back in, it's gonna be game 7. That's what it's gonna be. We get back, it's gonna be game might 7. Be.
It's not over till it's over. Oblivion Radio said June 5th.
June 5th is when the finals start.
And not a second earlier. So They may definitely try to get some, get the series extended, but we'll see. We'll see. But it's
the only thing I'm happy about is that we ain't got to hear Reggie Miller no more after this series. Or...
That's it.
Ain't doing fouls. Hey, I ain't doing the fouls. They don't give it to with Mike Breen, Doris Burke, and hell no, we subbing out Reggie for Richard Jefferson.
Oh man.
Slice.
Yeah. Donovan Mason, I don't know if you're on the subreddit, but there is a Dead End Sports community on the subreddit. They are active. I see you were mentioning that you want to continue the conversation. That is a place to continue the conversation you guys are having. I'm glad I just saw this. I meant to plug this in the beginning of the show. Go to the Dead End Sports sub community, and you guys can have this whole conversation there. So shout out to everybody there because they the ones that. And I didn't say anything, Nick, when you put it in the chat because I knew I had my own watch. But yeah, they were the ones that, because I had sent it to Doc yesterday. But they were calling us out in the chat. So definitely
they
go to the
They disrespectful in there. They be like, you need to. I'm like, nigga, I don't need to do shit.
You see how I feel, though, don't you?
I don't need to do shit. I stand by what I say. I ain't FIFO or Sheldon, where I'm over here saying, I want to see these teams win, and I pick the other team to win. Nah, nigga. Knicks in seven.
I picked OKC and the Pacers.
And I picked Knicks in seven.
I was just wrong because I said seven.
I went OKC. I went Knicks six, OKC in six.
Who picked the Pacers besides me?
I picked Knicks Wolves.
Just me?
Yeah, just you. I picked the Knicks as well. I said that they were the better team.
Dang.
But I said it's 7-2,
man. Kick this nigga out, man. Like, I didn't know I was the only one that was right, man. Kick him out, Ken.
Nah, Lou, I really did think somebody else did.
Eagles fan shit.
All right, we'll catch you guys next time. We out. Peace.